There's a new book out today about the rise of the ride-hailing app Uber and the dramatic fall of its founder, Travis Kalanick. It's called Super Pumped, The Battle for Uber, and its author, New York Times technology reporter Mike Isaac, joins us from New York. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. And first of all, let's just set the scene here. Uber started when? Back in 2009?
Nine, yes, that's right.
But it wasn't called Uber at the time.
Yeah, the first iteration of Uber was actually called Uber Cab. And if you lived in San Francisco or can even remember that far back, it was basically a black car service only for folks who were willing to pay a premium to get carted around in San Francisco.
Okay, and so that was then. And now Uber is worth how much money?
Now, I would say the tens of billions of dollars. At its highest valuation when it was private, upwards of $60 billion. That's a little lower now because they've taken a hit on the market, but it is quite a bit bigger now than it was when it was just a small black car service.
Okay, and all around the world now.
That's right.
Now, your book opens with a battle between Uber and city officials in Portland, Oregon. It was one of the many cities that Uber barged into before local officials could react. And it's kind of a case study in how Uber operated. Tell us what happened in Portland.
Yeah. So now Uber's so ubiquitous, it's hard to remember for some back when it was actually not legal to operate in many of these cities, right? So part of Uber's playbook from the very beginning was to take this service it had called UberX, which is essentially a way to sign up anyone to with a car and a background check to drive for Uber, and push into new cities over and over in states across the United States and then in new countries around the world. Sometimes they would face pushback from the local government, and in this case in Portland, what they had a problem with was a mandate from transportation officials saying, if you come into this city, we will shut you down. We will impound your cars. We don't want Uber here yet.
Mm-hmm.
So Uber, being Uber, wasn't going to take that lying down. And they had devised this piece of code called Grayball, was the code name internally. What it essentially did was tagged the apps of official transportation officers, even police officers, and used this code to kind of like hide Uber from these officers.
So that when they would request a car, for example, it would just cancel on them before it got to them, so they couldn't ticket the driver.
Yeah, and if you were a transportation official, it would look like the service was too busy or whatever. But in reality, Uber had sort of spotted them and tried to shut the app down before they could ever capture them.
And did that work?
It did. There were a lot of questions about its legality years later when we uncovered it, but they did that in a number of cities, and it kept the cops and transportation officials off their back, and it seemed to really work.
And it brings up the idea that Uber also had to, in every single place that it went, be really local about how it got itself in there. And you write, it was as if Kalanick had hired a private army of mini entrepreneurs and given them one mandate: conquer. Everyone was a founder of their own city-level fiefdom. Everyone got to live the startup hacker ethos, something Kalanick cherished and never wanted his company to lose, even as Uber spread like wildfire. With a slap on the back, Kalanick would send his officers out into the field to build their own infantry and fight for Uber.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. All over the world he did that.
I mean, there's sort of a dual brilliance and some drawbacks of this method. But Kalanick, he's a startup guy from the beginning, a serial entrepreneur, and really cherished this small company spirit and wanted to empower every new general manager in cities across the world to sort of take control of how they ran their local office. And the positive part of that is that, well, maybe someone who's from Miami might know how to build local operations in that city much better than, say, someone back in San Francisco headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
But the drawbacks of that is, if you sort of empower this army of bros to kind of take over each city and do what they want, sometimes you can have some really negative consequences. And one of those was Grayball, and another one was, you know, spending millions of dollars without really any oversight from the main office, or all sorts of sort of bad behaviors that came out later on.
Well, and let's talk also about the fact that in some cases, Uber officials were bribing authorities to look the other way.
Yeah, I mean, in some of the markets in Southeast Asia, they started setting up these what are called green light hubs, little places where drivers can stop in, sort of maintain their vehicles, get checked, in suburban areas, and this was not welcome or really legal in the area. So company employees started paying off local police officers in order to help them like move traffic through the areas. And that is another sort of detail that was obviously illegal but then came out later on in a deep investigation of the company. And now it's a question of whether they broke the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, basically. Mm-hmm.
There was also violence in many places, including India.
Yeah, you know, the real the story of Uber is really about parachuting into these areas, some of which may have like difficult economic or regional cultural issues going on, and then just sort of introducing this new transportation method, new business very quickly. And so in Brazil, they were in the depth of a recession and sort of real deep unemployment issues, and Uber came into the country and got up and running very fast. But also a bunch of drivers were murdered because of it was largely cash-based and drivers kept carrying cash on them as they picked up people. And so they were basically like rolling ATMs that robbers would go after and sort of pick them off. Or in India, for instance, there was just like real unrest around how they treated drivers. And it was hard for drivers to feel really like it was a reliable source of income and service.
I want to also ask you about China, because you talk about Kalanick's sort of obsession with getting into the China market, which has been so hard for Western tech companies to break into. And he threw a lot of money at that, and they scammed him badly.
Yeah, you know, China is this sort of jewel that every Western CEO has always wanted to conquer, especially tech company software CEOs. Google has had its many different sort of attempts to break into China, still trying to right now. And so Travis Kalanick thought he had cracked it. You know, he was going to court the officials. He was going to really spend as much money as he can subsidizing free rides. Now, the problem was that an entire crime syndicate sort of sprung up and started creating many sort of fake ride attempts to scam Uber out of what turned out to be tens of millions of dollars. And ultimately, half of all rides in some cities at one point were completely fake. And that money was just going into the pockets of scammers. But the thinking by Travis and others at the time was, we just keep spending, keep subsidizing this, and eventually we'll get into the country. And ultimately, that didn't work out.
Okay, so there have been obviously ups and downs in Uber's rise. But overall, can you think of any other company that has had comparable growth over such a short period of time?
Yeah, I mean, the popular phrase out in the Valley is that Uber was the fastest growing startup in Silicon Valley history. And I don't think you can really challenge that. This company had what some people called the perfect product market fit. You know, there were cities that didn't have great transportation systems. I remember living in San Francisco in 2008. You'd have to call a cab and just pray that it would come, right, whether it did or not. And so I do think that they really did change the world in how they provided transportation where it wasn't before. Now, you have to just wonder whether some of the other unintended side effects, you know, whether it's crumbling infrastructure of public transportation or changing how some cities operate and increasing traffic, like if those are worth the innovation that the company has brought with it.
Do you think Uber is here to stay as it is right now? Or do you think that there's a chance that somebody else could come along? I mean, it could be Lyft or somebody else or some other kind of transportation and knock them out.
Yeah, I think that's the real sort of irony of Uber, is that they really pioneered the category of ride hailing and ride sharing, but they might not be the ultimate winner of ride hailing and ride sharing. You know, you have to give them credit that they popularized the service. It's now ubiquitous in most countries around the world, but, you know, it might not have a business model that works out for them. They might be losing too much money. They lost, you know, more than $5 billion a few weeks ago in their quarterly earnings report. So even though we can credit them with the rise of ride sharing, it'll be interesting to see if they are the ultimate winners in the category.
Why haven't they been able to make money?
Well, you know, things have really changed over the past few years from, say, 2009 when Uber was up and running. In the beginning, they were really one of the dominant players in town, both in the U.S. and abroad. And Kalanick's obsession was just with raising money. Like, I would say every few months, they would raise a new round of venture capital starting around 2014. And they ultimately raised like billions, more than $10 billion in private funding to sort of keep this growth engine going. what happened was the funding environment changed, and now competitors in India and Southeast Asia, in South America and China, they were all able to raise equally large amounts of money. And now instead of Uber just sort of spending to grow in the United States, it's burning cash on multiple continents across dozens of countries, fighting competitors everywhere. And that just is hard to grow a business if you're just constantly burning money to break above even in market share.
Mike Isaac, let's talk about Travis Kalanick. He got a 1580 on his SAT, you're right. I mean, he's a very smart guy. It's almost a perfect score back in those days. And he apparently just had the best pitch to investors. He was able to just walk in and get them to just hand over millions of dollars. And in the case of Google Ventures, almost $300 million.
That's right. I mean, you know, there's this obsession in the Valley with Steve Jobs and this sort of showman-like pitch. But anyone who's ever met Travis Kalanick knows he really is a true polished showman. He knew how to come in and dazzle potential investors with the rocket ship growth that Uber had early on. And so he and his business partner, Emil Michael, eventually set up what they called the home show. With IPOs, there's a roadshow where companies will pitch themselves to investors. Instead, they flipped that on its head and had investors come to Uber to beg to be let into the funding rounds. And it worked. There were, you know, from mutual funds to giants of private equity to VCs, everyone was just fighting to get into this company, which kept raising money after round until it hit a $68.5 billion private valuation, which is one of the highest in private tech companies ever.
Okay, so he was very good at raising money, but also, as you point out, and as we now know because of the reporting that's been done about Travis Kalanick, he set this tone at the company that was really unhealthy and looked the other way. Yeah. Usually when one of the people beneath him would get into trouble, either with sexual harassment or whatever the case might be, the message was, as long as they're performing well, I don't care.
Yeah, that's right. I think Uber's DNA from the beginning is to win at all costs, to keep your numbers up and to keep growing. Now, what sort of went by the wayside is worrying about how a culture was built, if we can sort of build actual HR systems or practices that would like make people feel like they're not going to get harassed or have a coffee mug thrown at them or have their manager hit on them on their first day of work or whatever. And those weren't really things that leaders at the company put first. It was really always about not feeling like a bloated sort of corporate giant that Travis didn't want the company to be. And while it kept Uber scrappy and lean and able to grow quickly, I think it also came with a lot of side effects that caught up to them in a big way in 2017 as one scandal after another kept breaking.
As the scandals broke and as Travis Kalanick sort of got deeper and deeper into a hole, he relied a lot on Arianna Huffington, who's on the board of Uber. How did that relationship come about, and why is she so important to him and to Uber?
Yeah, so Arianna is a fascinating character in this book and I think in, you know, public life too. And she has always managed to kind of find the next trend that is coming up. You know, she was politics early on and then went into digital media with the Huffington Post and then found Uber. So she's always seemed to find like what is around the next corner. And she did that with Uber really well and attached to Travis and became this sort of very trusted figure in his inner circle and ultimately gained a board seat. Later on in Uber's history, and as I talk about in the book, there's a pretty brutal board fight where they're trying to remove Travis from the top of the company as CEO. And he felt very close to Arianna as one of the people in on his side, right? And I think she really saw in him like the good qualities that Travis has and his willingness to fight, his willingness to be a powerful entrepreneur and lead his people. And sometimes, you know, probably thought the good qualities outweighed the bad ones. So she becomes a really important ally to him in this book, and I don't want to spoil what actually ends up happening between the two, but she is an important figure.
There was a really interesting fight that Kalanick had with Apple, maybe we could just call it a meeting at a certain point, but basically Uber was doing something that it shouldn't have been doing with data that was available to them in the beginning on the iPhone. Explain what happened. This is about IMEI numbers.
Sure. So this goes back to some of the problems that Uber has had in China. There was a big fraud activity problem. Uber needed to find a way to spot fraudsters So what they would do is use a specific number called the IMEI, essentially an identification number on each iPhone. And they use this service to fingerprint each iPhone. So even if a fraudster wiped the iPhone and re-signed up to do another scam, Uber was able to use that fingerprint and identify it and then block them from the service. Mm-hmm. That seems totally fair game, and it was even a novel way of figuring out how to solve this fraud problem. But the other problem was that eventually fingerprinting became something that was against Apple's rules. It's Apple's big on privacy, as you probably mm-hmm. hear the CEO talk about a lot. And so fingerprinting devices and attaching identity to a device after it's been wiped is not cool with Apple. So eventually Uber was caught doing that even after the rules had changed and had to come in for a very tense meeting between Eddie Q, who heads up iTunes and a lot of cloud services, and then Tim Cook, Apple CEO himself.
And they said basically, if you ever do this again, we're going to take you off the App Store, which is like you can't operate as Uber without access to the App Store.
I mean, imagine everyone who has an iPhone not being able to use Uber now. That's right. Just a death blow to the company.
But they didn't do it. That's the interesting thing, is that they just let him off with a warning, basically.
I mean, the leverage that I would say that Uber has is that a lot of people use the service, and it's a key component for a long time of why people wanted iPhones, especially when it's an iPhone-only app. That's the sort of delicate dance that Apple has to deal with sometimes when apps are so powerful that it's hard for them to even discipline them when they're breaking the rules.
What finally got Kalanick out?
You know, I think it was years of turning his head on a lot of practices that were simmering under the surface in the company, whether it was like cultural issues or harassment, or whether it was questionable business practices that, you know, may have broken some laws, depending on your argument. I think also, you know, I go over this in the book, but like 2016, 2017 is this real year of reckoning for tech companies mm-hmm. where, say, the past 15, 20 years of coverage has largely been in awe of founders who build these giant machines of capital creation. And I think something changed in the past 2 years where folks are starting to recognize the negative effects that tech might have on the world. And maybe automation might be stealing jobs at some point. Or maybe if these self-driving cars become a real thing, you know, drivers are thrown by the wayside. Or maybe we're being manipulated through Facebook and don't even know it. And I think Uber was at the nexus of this flashpoint of anger for a lot of people. And especially with all the baggage that it had, it just came to bear at the exact wrong time for Travis Kalanick.
Well, and of all those companies, Uber has so much data on its users and where they're going at all times.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, and this is the thing that I think catches the tech industry at large off guard, is that they've been collecting information on how we live and operate and move through the world for years, and no one has really bristled at it until now. And so now companies, all companies, but especially Uber, they have to scramble to figure out how can we do this in an ethical way while still maintaining our business model. It's a fine line, and I think every company right now is sort of struggling to figure that out.
What does the rise of Uber and then the fall of Kalanick tell you about the American economy right now?
I mean, look, I think Uber did pioneer this category in how people not only move around, but just how labor works, how services work, how we can get things from just a tap of a smartphone. But I also think with that comes a lot of really thorny ideas about what employment looks like, what labor models and protections should be. You know, I think workers are upset that with the rise of the gig economy, we're starting to lose some of these fundamental protections that have been fought for a very long time. And it's going to take years to sort of play out whether we're okay with how that works and how that's created this new form of industry.
Do you think there will be taxis in 10 years?
I think if there are, they're going to look very different. They're going to have to look very different and probably need to get connected to a smartphone app at least much, much, much easier.
Do people tell you that they think that Uber has the future that it would have had if Kalanick had stayed? Because obviously there's a reason he was able to last as long as he did. People saw a vision in him and thought he was driving Uber basically in the right direction.
Yeah.
Does it have that now without him?
You know, it's really funny. I was talking to someone earlier about this. The 2017, they just needed someone to come in and put the fires out in the building because mm-hmm. the baggage that came with Travis's leadership was weighing the company down. Now we're 2 years into Dara Khosrowshahi's reign. He's the new CEO. He's been called the dad of Silicon Valley, and the company is pretty boring right now. And some argued that's what Uber needed, at least for a period of time. But then some are also, you know, saying, well, we kind of missed that fire that Travis had. That was what motivated employees to grow the company and conquer the world so quickly, you know. So I do wonder what the future of Uber is going to be like, if it's going to be an Amazon, as they keep saying that they want it to be, a transportation platform, or if it's going to be a more middling company like eBay where, you know, it might sort of chug along but is far from the world-dominating platform that they once thought it would be.
That is Mike Isaac, whose new book is called Super Pumped, The Battle for Uber. Mike Isaac, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
And you can find an excerpt from the book and listen to the rest of my interview with Mike Isaac at hereandnow.org.